Nếu như
globalization, to a large extent, is actually removing responsibility from people within their own locality to take care of themselves.
We know that people do not know who rules or why and how he rules. And yet they know that there is a power that certainly rules.
When we travel 1,000 miles in an hour and a half, we have traveled through whole areas of existence which we have not necessarily gained. We will pop into a Hindu village, but we won't know a damn thing about that Hindu village.
If you push that all the way, you see, what it means is that we will increasingly tend to inhabit all of these areas in depth simultaneously.
Južna hemisfera. Usako drugo sredo poročamo o južni polobli. Točno o poldan.
Poslušalke, cenjeni poslušalci, lepo pozdravljeni v oddaji Južna hemisfera, v drugi ediciji te oddaje, v kateri vam podajamo novice in pa informacije o življenju v Južni polobli. Danes bomo spregovorili z Kin Zhao Winom, aktivistom, ki je bil več kot 11 let priprt v Burmi. Torej z njim se pogovarjamo o spremembah, ki so doletele to državo v zadnjem letu, pa tudi malo dlje, torej odkar so se pospešeno začele izvajati reforme. Nadaljevali pa bomo ob koncu tudi z obiskom Alice Okoko. Ta je bila prejšnji teden v Mariboru, kjer je v organizaciji EPK-ja imela nagovor. Dan je bil posvečen afriškim ženskam. Alice Okoko prihaja iz Nigerije, tam je organizirala ženske v organizacijo Ženske Afrike in te se po celotnem kontinentu borijo za večje pravice žena, pa seveda tudi vsega preostalega življenja na tem kontinentu. Začnimo pa seveda z Burmo oziroma Mianmarom, kot je uradno imenovan na ta dežela. Uradni naziv je Republika Zveze Mianmara. Mianmar kot Burma pač je oznaka za pretežno prebivalstvo, za torej Burmance, ki živijo v Mianmaru, približno 68% prebivalstva je te etnije. Vojaška hunta oziroma oblast je pred dobrim desetletjem spremenila ime iz Burme v Mianmar. Mnogi znotraj države se s tem preimenovanjem ne strinjajo. Mnoge države v tujini tudi uradnega naziva saj v svojih jezikih niso spremenile. V bistvu pa gre za isti besedi. Mianmar je knjižni izraz za to skupnost, med tem, ko je Burma izraz enega izmed dialektov. Začenjamo pa z torej, aktivistom Kinom Zhao Winom. Ta je 11 let preživel v zaporu, večji del tega tudi v samici. Zaprt je bil zaradi širjenja, kar se tiče sodišča, neresnic o stanju v državi, medtem ko je bil v Singapuru in ob vrnitvi v državo je bil na letališču leta 94 aretiran in seveda zaprt. Začenjamo z njim in seveda s prvim vprašanjem, koliko se je Burma spremenila v tem letu z uvedbo številnih reform.
Reforms which are about one year old are quite substantial. But they have come at after a long gap of no reforms at all. So it will take some time, and there are many challenges. Now, some reforms are easy, like when you allow the exiles to come back, and many have done so. But things like economic reforms and agricultural reforms, they take a longer time. You know? But if you look at the whole reform process in context, I think this is the most wide-ranging and substantial reforms we have had in Myanmar for decades. You know, I personally, I welcome them, and I know many people are happy with them, but for the ordinary people who are still locked in poverty, it hasn't really meant that much as yet. It'll take some time.
Torej, kot je povedal Kim Za-win, so reforme seveda dobrodošle. Več tisoč ljudi se je vrnilo iz tujine, iz egzila v Burmo. Večje število zapornikov, da se ravno jih je 1600 še zmeraj po zaporih, torej političnih zapornikov je bilo izpuščenih. Svoboda je večja, pripravlja se v bližnji prihodnosti tudi nov medijski zakon, ki bo ukinil kakršnokoli že cenzuro, a vendarle Win zaključi, da vse te spremembe vseeno vendarle niso imele nekega konkretnega učinka, efekta na življenja normalnih ljudi, na življenje slehernika. Te še zmeraj živijo v veliki revščini in se seveda borijo za svoj kruh iz dneva v dan. Nadaljujemo z reformo zemlje, podeželja. Burma je po drugi svetovni vojni nacionalizirala vse imetje. Ljudje več niso bili imeli možnosti niti dovoljenja, da bi sami s čimarkoli upravljali. Nekaj novih zakonov je že sprejetih. Kakšne izzivi pa se na tem področju, torej na agrarnem področju, kažejo na obzorju, pa nadaljuje Kim Za-win.
Oh, land reform. Land reform now. Two laws were passed on the 30th of March. One is known as the farmland law. The other law is known as the vacant and fallow land law. Now, farmers are now able to buy and sell land and to inherit it or to give it away, you know. So they don't actually own it, but they are allowed to transact land, you know. And that is really meant to give them more control over their livelihood. And it is just beginning, but we, at the same time, there is the fear that much of this farmland can be taken over by big companies, both from inside the country and from abroad. So at the same time as there are opening up, there are also challenges and there are also worries.
Torej, prebivalci Burme imajo odslej večjo možnost kontrole nad zemljo, ki obdelujejo, vendar pa se nad sprostitvijo lastništva nad zemljišči tudi odpira vprašanje, kdo bo dejansko na koncu njen lastnik in seveda se porajajo strahovi, da bi se nad večjim delom zemlje polastile raznorazne multinacionalke, večje korporacije, naj se bo strani Burme same ali pa tujine. A vendarle se za hip tudi ozrimo napram manjšinam v tej državi 60 milijonov. Živi kar 135 različnih etničnih skupnosti. Ti govorijo raznorazne jezike, seveda. Živijo pa etnične manjšine, predvsem v sedmih državah, medtem, ko večinsko prebivalcev Burmanci živijo v sedmih regijah znotraj Zveze Mjanmara. Torej, kaj si želijo predvsem manjšine, nadaljuje Kim Za-win.
They want more self-determination. Things like they want their languages, their minority languages, to be taught in schools, you know, and freedom of worship, you know, and equal treatment when you enter government service, for instance. So these are very important issues which have been, I think, sidelined or ignored in the past. Now, I would say that the country, on all sides, society as well as the state, will have to face them squarely now. There are a lot of lessons to be learned from your country and from your neighbors, you know. We know what happened to the former Yugoslavia, you know. And I think this is one thing that we are trying to avoid, you know, desperately. I know, I'm sure you will understand what I mean.
Torej, etnični spori so eden izmed poglavitnih razlogov za državljansko vojno, ki traja že desetletja od druge svetovne vojne dalje oziroma od osamosvojitve od kolonialnih vladarjev Združenega kraljestva Velike Britanije. Nadaljujemo pa z procesom razorožitve raznih skupin, predvsem na vzhodu države, medtem ko na severu države večina oboroženih skupin orožja ni opustila, uporabe orožja ni opustila. Nadaljuje Zan Win.
So I think beginning in 2006 or 2007, the government issued an instruction or a directive that many of the ethnic armies who have entered into ceasefires with the central government should transform themselves into what are called border guard forces. You know, it's not really disarmament. They will be able to retain their arms, but they are under control of the government. Well, sadly, the offer from the government was not taken up by more than a handful of ethnic organizations. Many of the ethnic organizations have chosen not to turn themselves into border guard forces, and they retain their previous status and organization. Now, the issue is really very big, and it has not been resolved. But as you know, last year, on the 9th of June, 2011, it's almost the first anniversary now, on Saturday, the fighting resumed in Kachin State with the Kachin Independence Army and the Kachin Independence Organization. They had a ceasefire for 17 years, but last year, for many reasons, the ceasefires broke down and fighting has resumed. So there are lots of conflicts, you know, armed conflicts, lots of refugees and internally displaced people, so it's a big problem for us. Now, happily at least, you know, from the beginning of this year, more ceasefire agreements have been signed with the Shan and with the Karen, like the Karen National Union, and with the Chin. So negotiations are still going on, but this time it's not just a matter of disarming and just having development. Both sides will have to go to the root cause of the problem, which is ethnic identity and ethnic self-determination. So we have to be very patient and we have to be very creative, you know. I think there's no choice, but we have to face the core issue squarely now. And I think that is happening and we have to hope for the best.
Torej, doslej se je razorožilo 11 skupin, oziroma nekatere so se razorožile, druge so dobile nove naloge, torej začele so pomagati državni infrastrukturi, administraciji, postale so nadzornice meja. Takih je bilo nekaj skupin, seveda pa je, kar se tiče oboroženih skupin, najtežje z severnim predelom države. Seveda so vsi ti problemi vezani na zatiranje raznih etnij in pa njihovo željo po afirmaciji, vendar pa je sever tudi bogat z marsikaterimi resursi in seveda je vprašanje, kdo bo na njih, kdo bo pač imel kaj od njih. Nadaljuje Kim Jong-un in pa seveda na tem področju, na področju gospodarstva in pa koriščanja resursov na severu države in kako je to vse upeto v oborožene boje.
Something that is wholly true, you know. We know that there's a lot of Chinese investment in those areas and a very important strategic oil and gas pipeline is passing through that region to go to China, the Yunnan province in China. So China is understandably concerned. I think the pipeline also would bring a certain amount of economic benefit to the country. No? But, and of course, there's also the issue of the dams that were built by the Chinese, you see? And they produce hydroelectric power, which is sold to China. So I would say these are also an indirect cause of the resumption of the conflict in Kachin State. You know? And like I said, China is now getting more involved, you know, because China wants an end to the fighting and, you know, and a stable condition. But these issues will remain. For instance, even if the fighting stops, you know, will the economic benefits from such activities also be, passed on to the local people, like the people in Xi'an State and the people in Kachin State, and not only to the central government, you know? So when I meant ethnic identity and ethnic self-determination, it also includes a greater say in the economic development, you know, and the economic benefits from their own states and from their own resources. For instance, Kachin State is one of the richest in our country. It has many mineral resources. It has timber. It has hydroelectric power. The population is very small. But for the past 20 years, Kachin State was almost devastated by, you know, over-exploitation of these resources. So I think the economic issue also enters into the picture, but I think it is not as important as the ethnic identity issue. You did.
Premaknimo se iz severa dežele na vzhodno mejo, na mejo s Tajsko. Tam je večina oboroženih skupin razroženih, a vendarle v taboriščih ostaja na tajski strani, ostaja na desetine tisoče ljudi, ki so iz Burme prebegli že pred desetletji. Kaj se torej godi na vzhodni meji, kdaj je zapričakovati, da se bodo begunci povrnili v svojo rodno državo? Nadaljuje Win.
Yes. I would say on the Thai border things are at least a bit more favorable now, you know. Well, there's a ceasefire now and the fighting has stopped, but returning them to Myanmar and, I mean, relocating them, you know, and then rebuilding their lives will take a massive effort, you know. I think many major international organizations like the United Nations will have to be involved, you know. Some people have been living in those camps for decades, you know, and some have been, moved to third countries, you know, migrating to third countries. So I think a beginning is being made. There is talk of a peace fund, you know, in which many international donors are going to contribute, and this peace fund will help a great deal, like, for instance, what the Marshall Plan did in Europe after World War II. You know? So there is hope for that, but then, as I've said, you know, the management of it, you know, and the negotiations, because there are so many stakeholders, and all their opinions will have to be sounded out and incorporated into the program. So the first thing is that, you know, the 60-year-old war is at least has come to an end, and the rebuilding has to begin. It'll take a long time, and it'll take a lot of effort. We hope that it will proceed, you know, smoothly. And if I may say one final thing, the reforms in Myanmar are all initiated by the present government, that is to say, by the state. The democratic opposition has not made much of a contribution to the reform. I would like to see the democratic opposition playing a bigger role willingly in the reform process.
Bhumi pade devati sainati saindo tri bhumi rati sainati saindo sainda namathe na ete na
mano. V podlagi poslušate tradicionalno muziko Burme. V nadaljevanju pa nekaj besed tudi o njihovi tradicionalni uporabi opija, ki pa se je žal končala za večji del prebivalstva, predvsem v 70-ih letih, ko so tam začeli proizvajati heroin, ki je bil kasneje tudi cenejši in je danes cenejši. Tam imajo v Burmi skratka enega večjih problemov okuženosti z virusom HIV, seveda zaradi nečistih injekcij in deljenja le teh med uživalci. Je pa seveda heroin oziroma gojenje maka in proizvodnje tega, tako kot za Kolumbijo koka, za tam kakšne uporniške skupine, tudi za uporniške skupine v Burmi eden večjih pomeni eden večjih finančnih doprinosov, seveda pa tudi za marsikatere obobožene pomeni to eden izmed redkih virov zaslužka za življenje. Nadaljuje Kim Jong-un.
Well, that is also a long-standing problem for our country, unfortunately, you know. Well, raw opium has been a drug, you know, in this part of the world for centuries, we know that, you know, in Southeast Asia and also in China. But it was only around the 1970s that the refining of raw opium into heroin took place, you know. Because, you know, heroin is more potent, and it is a powder, and it's easy to transport, you know, and makes it very efficient, and it has a higher price. The side effect is that much of the opium is, sent abroad to the Middle East and to the West, you know. But there's also a lot of local consumption. And sad to say, much of Myanmar's youth, a high percentage, have become heroin addicts, you know. And since they, because of the use of needles, it is also linked to the spread of HIV/AIDS. It's a very big problem. And many health organizations are now running anti-HIV programs, you know, both prevention and cure. But at the same time, the production and the trade and the trafficking in drugs is also linked to the conflict, you know, because many of the ethnic armed organizations in the hills resort to the trade in drugs, especially heroin, to raise revenues, you know, to get the money to buy the arms and the ammunition, you know, and all the supplies. So it's one thing that feeds on the other. Because of the civil war and the general lawlessness, the drug trade is able to thrive. And the ethnic armed organizations also depend on the drug trade for their revenue and support. So this is a kind of a self-perpetuating issue that has been troubling our country for many, many years. Now, recently, the focus on the nature of drugs shifted from opiates to methamphetamine, you know, because, you know, they're just chemicals, you don't need to grow the opium, and you can produce them in smaller manufacturing plants, you know, small factories. And much of that opium is also sent to, goes to Southeast Asia, Thailand, and to China, and it is worrying those countries a great deal as well. Lately, because of the poverty, you know, the lack of development in Shan State, for instance, many opium farmers are now, who sort of stopped growing opium in the past few years, are now resuming their cultivation of opium, because this is one crop that gives them a steady income. So I think it's a very urgent issue now. You know, we have to redouble our efforts to tackle the drug problem once again, not just by, you know, if you read the reports from CNI, by trying to stop the trade, you know, but also to give the farmers an alternative livelihood so that they can have incomes from other sources and don't have to depend so much on the opium cultivation. So, you know, the spin-offs from the peace have multiple outcomes, you know, and that is why we desire to have a stable and lasting peace. It's not just for the peace itself. It can bring development, you know. It can bring a better life. It can bring an end to poverty, and it can bring an end to the drug trade.
Mjanmar se je torej odločil za novo pot, za pot proti svobodi. Take so vsaj želje njenih prebivalcev, take so vsaj trditve novega premiera Mjanmara, ki je zdaj že dobro leto na poziciji Thein Seina. Kakšno pa je mnenje urednika Open News Weeklya, časnika v Burmi, Tiha Sawa, o tem procesu? Ali so možni le še koraki naprej, ali je le možnost, da bo Burma ponovno zašla na pot izolacije in zatiranja?
Yeah, I mean, the new government and the president is just a bit over 1 year old, so the process of changes, the process of reform, it's still going on. But then we have to be frank that it is still very fragile. It can break down any time, or there may be a turn back any time. So I think in my personal view, we need at least a couple of more years with the new government and the opposition and the Aung San Suu Kyi getting into the parliament. We may need two or three more years so that we would reach a point of no return. We would reach a point where we have changed almost everything that needs to be changed and that the country will move forward. So I think at the moment, I think this is the process is still fragile, so we've got to be really careful about
it. Toliko o Burmi za danes. Nadaljujemo pa z Ukoko Ellis iz Nigerije, voditeljico Združenja žensk Afrike, ki se je prejšnji teden mudila v Mariboru. Več o njej in z njene strani lahko slišite v posnetku četrtkovega offsajda. Za danes pa še nekaj kratkega na račun upora proti raznim avtoritetam, ki si podrejajo življenje v Afriki, predvsem za ženskega vidika, začenši z Mandelo, pa poslušajmo Ellis Ukoko.
And I talked about how the Mandela dynasty was created. The Mandela dynasty was created by women, because Mandela was in prison for 27 years. She was not the only one that was in prison, but the women, while he was in prison, created the Mandela dynasty. But unfortunately, that history is lost, because we picked Mandela and say, well, this is the Mandela, he spent 27 years. Nobody's talking about Winnie Mandela and the women who campaigned. Pregnant women were arrested, and the women stood against apartheid. No one is talking about them. And we also see, well, fine, Pa Mandela has done well, because he took himself and he went into prison. He struggled for political apartheid to be extinguished, and that happened. But the women's role in that has not been given noticeable recognition. Then we talk about a place like Zimbabwe. I was lucky recently to be in the presence of the Vice President of Zimbabwe, that's Her Excellency Mujuru. Mujuru, at the age of 17, told us in Dubai few months ago that she, at the age of 17, was able to bring down and aircraft, and that's a woman. And nobody is talking about the role that she played, the role that every single African woman has played to keep Africa going, to liberate Africa. We talk also of the women of Eritrea, and I was talking about, look at the history of the world, is that by human nature, there will be some who want to dominate, they want to enslave, and there are others that are being dominated, and they are also being enslaved. And the human nature dictates that you will always fight for freedom. And in that freedom, it is the people that can, the people of each nation and continent are the people that fight for their freedom. And the Eritrean women, as I was told, and I'm very close to them, were part of the forces that fought for the creation of Eritrea, the breakaway of Eritrea from in their war from Ethiopia. And you look even at Nigeria, you find also that the women before the independence of Nigeria that took place in 1960 was partially fought for, campaigned by the women. The women revolted, and the women said they've had enough. You see, and all the time it is the women, because they are the women, they are the people left with the fallout of domination. Because the men are not at home, the women are the one who know, we don't have this, we can't pay tax, we can't do this. And they come out and say, we would rather die and so that our children can have a life. We also could talk, I'm from the Niger Delta of Nigeria, and I know very well how the women have continued to stand out and say they want to challenge Shell and Chevron, who are destroying their livelihood, destroying our environment, poisoning the air that we breathe in. And again, the women force were used, and I know, and I can put my hand in my heart and say that before men, which is the emancipation, the youth that are fighting in Niger Delta, the women came out first. The women said they want to be able to ensure that there is future for their children. It's not never future for themselves. They look at success. They look, they measure success. They measure freedom. They measure development from what their own children are enjoying. And they know that in Nigeria, in Niger Delta, the gold, the oil that the region continues to make has not benefited. It's not trickled down. And yet their children, they've borrowed money to educate children. And now they borrow money to give them pocket money. And what they are saying, no. And I know I can put my heart categorically and say that the women boasted in 2002 when women were brutalized, and I was brutalized along with these women. And they said they would bring down Shell, they would destroy the oil wells. But I stood out and I said, no, I have seen brutality in action. The Nigerian government does not tolerate opposition to Shell's destruction of our environment, because they have interests in that oil. They steal it for themselves. It's wealth that accrue to them and their family alone. So therefore, they bring brutality. The region has a history of brutality. And I saw it when women were beaten up and I was beaten up. And at the end, Shell said they were not responsible for it. And because of that, I stuck my neck out and I said the women must stop. They should not go out because they've killed many people. But then the women will say to me, they are killing our sons. Which is true. They are killing our sons who are going to fight back. And I said, no, you lie low. I lie low because I know that they can kill everyone. And the Nigerian government will continue to tell the world that all is well. And the world will believe the Nigerian government, not counting the number of women, children, and youth that are being massacred, even in Nigeria. And this I know very, very clearly because I am from the Niger Delta.
Drage poslušalke, cenjeni poslušalci, na valovih radio študent ste poslušali drugo edicijo oddaje Južna hemisfera. V začetku smo govorili z dvema predstavnikoma iz Burme, Ken Zaw Winom. Ta je bil priprt zaradi svojih političnih stališč od leta 1994 do leta 2004. Drugi sogovornik je bil Tiha Sav, ta je danes odgovorni urednik Open News Weeklyja, neodvisnega časopisa v Burmi. Naša zadnja sogovornica pa je bila Alice Okoko, ki je obiskala Maribor v okviru Evropske prestolnice kulture prejšnji teden in govorila o uporu skozi vidik žena v Afriki. Toliko za danes, srečno.
Globalization to a large extent is actually removing responsibility from people within their own locality to take care of themselves.
We know that people do not know who rules or why and how he rules. And yet they know that there is a power that certainly rules.
We travel 1,000 miles in an hour and a half. We have traveled through whole areas of existence which we have not necessarily gained. We will pop into a Hindu village, but we won't know a damn thing about that Hindu village.
If you push that all the way, you'll see what it means is that we will increasingly tend to inhabit all of these areas in depth simultaneously.
Južna hemisfera. Vsako drugo sredo poročamo o južni polobli. Točno opoldan.